WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. AJ Myers joined alongside Griffin Bloomstein, getting you ready for Syracuse and Pitt later this week, or whenever you're listening. It could be game time. Who knows when you're listening to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. That's the glory of the pod. You can listen to it whenever you want and get all the insight, get you ready for Syracuse and Pitt. It's an interesting one, Saturday night in the Dome, alumni weekend. We'll talk about that. But first, before we get to that, Griffin, it was fall break for Syracuse, bye week for the football team, no game. How have you enjoyed being home? Have you counted all the 50 states? Have you memorized all the 50 states? You're recording this in your room with that lovely map of the United States behind you.
I have not counted all 50 states, unfortunately. You know, I did. I'm not sure if we've talked about this, but I've talked about it a bunch that I was somewhere a couple of weeks ago, and I was on the good old Sporkle website.
Yep.
And I took the 50 capitals quiz.
Oh, capitals.
I used to know all of them.
Wow.
Down. And now I don't know whether like you forget stuff when you get older or something, or like, dude, I was having some problems, or maybe just I haven't practiced them in a little bit, but there's some of these states that now like are just lost. And like some of them, I thought of the college city instead of like the big city of the college instead of the capital. And I don't know what's going on.
Well, that's the weird thing. I think some capitals or some states, the biggest city is the capital. But others, it's not. Like Pennsylvania, perfect example. Philadelphia is not the capital. And then when it comes to states, your neck of the woods always gets me. That area gets a little convoluted of which is which with all those little tiny puzzle pieces of states.
I mean, you don't live too far. Pennsylvania, that's not too far.
Yeah, but they're tiny. You got to remember them all up in that little corner there.
Well, what's Rhode Island?
What I mean, if you move your head, I can tell you. is Syracuse, New York? I can always get that one. That's no problem.
What
getting New York in the states?
Oh, what is New York?
Oh, New York's capital. Oh, I understand what you're saying. Oh, New York's capital is
Oh God.
Is it? Why do I want to say it's Albany, but I know it's not. What is New York's capital?
It is Albany.
It is? Okay, good. I knew it. All right.
But I asked what was Providence, and then you deflected.
Oh, I thought you meant where.
Right, what's Rhode Island? I just said Providence. Okay.
Example. Okay. Back to New York and back to Syracuse, New York, a great city in Syracuse, not the capital of New York. There was some interesting news day. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon. Otto has inked an NIL deal, Griff. This is... I think this is, you know, I mean, sometimes I'll say things that are bigger deals than not. I'll go back to the summer when I said Ricky Collins being at Media Week was a bigger deal than what people were making it. I mean, hey, he ended up being the starting quarterback. It was a big deal that he was there for Media Week. I think this is a big deal. I think this – now, I don't know where money-wise if this is going to the athletic program. I guess it has to be going to the athletic program unless Otto is getting a remake. But I still think it's kind of cool. He's the first mascot to ink such a deal.
Yeah, it is cool. I think what's going to happen is like they're going to have like Otto merch on the team store,
yes,
similarly to that of a Deuce Chestnut or a Jack Stonehouse that appeared in that video. But like, so, which is cool. People love the Otto merchandise, the apparel with Otto on it. So maybe we'll get some cool things. I know that they have the lacrosse helmets with Otto last year. If they start selling those, who knows? Those might be pretty popular. I'd buy an Otto lacrosse helmet. That looks pretty sick. But who knows? I think, yeah, it'll be good. Maybe, hopefully, if it goes to the people that are Otto, the students that are Otto, then I mean, we might need to change our
Great
career
for
paths here.
them.
Because like, if I could ink an NIL deal as Otto, who knows? I might jump ships out of this radio business.
I think it's always one thing I've wanted them to do is put Otto on the football helmets as like a alternate look. But I don't think Fran, I mean, Fran Brown doesn't want to mess with uniform combinations. I don't think he would be okay with putting Otto on the helmet.
No, probably not. And I mean, it's been an interesting week for Fran Brown. We'll touch on the Penn State job opening. James Franklin said goodbye, and some names have been circulating around, and Fran Brown's hasn't been linked at all, but his name has been brought up certainly with some of the other openings that have been around in the nation, whether that's in potentially Auburn opening up, potentially Oklahoma, potentially Florida, some of these other schools that are looking for jobs, Oklahoma State. And so it's interesting to see what Fran Brown, obviously he shut down any rumors, and it was an interesting Monday press conference if anyone was following that's listening. And when our friend of the pod, Javon Edmonds, asked a question, I was like, Fran, are you thinking about leaving, or
Yeah, it
have
was
you thought about it at
a pretty
all? Or,
stark response.
and Fran was like, nope. Fran took pretty offense to that, which
Yeah.
I think it's a totally fair question. Hey, like, there's some other jobs opening up. Have you heard anything about it? And when Fran came here to before last year's press conference, he was like, hey, like, this is where I want to be, not leaving. And so I think when any time when a big job comes up and any relevant coaches in the media get asked that, it's pretty normal.
It
And
certainly is.
so
I mean, I expect him, the response he gave is what I expected him to say. I wouldn't expect him to be like, oh, yeah, I love Penn State. Man, I would love to go there. Nebraska's head coach did give kind of a weirder response. I don't know the exact quote, but it was more like, oh, I love Penn State. I think if you say that, then you really start to stir the pot a little bit. I'm totally get why Fran Brown held his ground, but I want to go to what SMU's head coach, Rhett Lashley, actually said a few weeks ago. He said in college football, in a season, you can be on such a roller coaster. 3 weeks ago, yeah, Fran Brown was linked to every job because he just knocked off Dabo Sweeney and Clemson. But now his team's lost two straight and he don't look that good of a coach anymore. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he ends this season, to which that will really determine if he's linked to an Arkansas. If he's, I really don't think he's going to be linked to a Penn State, partially because I think that there's an agent connection with Penn State that's going to be getting that replacement. I don't think Fran Brown is yet at the pedigree of a Penn State. Now in Arkansas and Oklahoma State, maybe that is more of the track in which Fran Brown is on, but I think Penn State is a little bit too high of a jump for Fran Brown. I'd be surprised given that Nick Saban's replacement was a coach from Washington. I don't think if you want to go on that comparison, I don't think Syracuse and Washington are on the same playing field.
I agree in that sense, but I think Fran Brown is a rising star as a coach, and
No
I
doubt,
think
no doubt.
him with the backing and the money of a Penn State, and like the big thing that I guess he was not happy about was him someone's like them saying that Penn State's a bigger program than Syracuse.
Yeah,
And you can debate all you want. It
it
is. And the money at Penn State and the funding and the backers, and they just signed a deal with Adidas. And so it all plays into figure. And I think given their resources, and I think what Fran has done at Georgia, and I think Penn State's a very successful program. They've had their scandalous past and they've gotten over it thanks to James Franklin in due part. I think Fran would excel there. And I think for people to say he wouldn't is kind of false. But also I think it's good that Fran has the mindset that he wants to stay at Syracuse. Because I think Syracuse fans, as much as a down year you could say as this, and maybe this is just where Syracuse's expectations were, and they're going to meet the expectations depending on what happens the rest of the season. For Syracuse fans should be happy that Fran Brown is not going anywhere. Like, Fran Brown is a coach that brought five star to Syracuse, hopefully, although there's still time. But like, this is this is a new wave of Syracuse. And I think anytime a job opens up, if Fran Brown is having success or is Fran Brown doing as well as he did last year, there will always be questions. There will always be doubts. And like this will always be a thing as long as Fran Brown is the head coach of Syracuse.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree. And I do think it'll be interesting to see, just like this Otto NIL deal, they never reveal the numbers of these contracts. We have no idea what Fran Brown's length of contract. We may know the length. Maybe that was a prior report that I'm missing, but we have no idea what the numbers are. So it will be interesting to see if he does get an extension this summer. I'm sure it'll be an uptick in buyout or something of that nature. And the agent I was referring to is Jimmy Sexton. He's like the super agent in college football right now. He was James Franklin's agent. He was also Nick Saban's agent. A client of his is who is now Alabama's head coach. So I think he kind of monopolizes who's getting that Penn State job. As far as I know, he is not tied. He actually, I know for a fact he's not tied to Fran Brown. So I think that rules him out of a Penn State job, even though he does have the geographical connections. I don't think it entirely rules him out of a job, elsewhere than other than Syracuse next season. Because I think in college athletics, we've learned anything the past 3, 4 years, anything at all can happen.
Money talks.
Yeah.
That's what they say. Money talks, and it'll be interesting. And I think Syracuse being a private university is not necessarily a bad thing in this case, where the numbers aren't public, where almost like 80 to 90% of schools, FBS power conference schools, are public, and so all that information is public. You can see how much James Franklin was making at Penn State, how much his buyout was, and same thing with Alabama and Ohio State and some of these other big public schools. And so it's interesting. And I think Fran has a lot to show you in these last 6 games. Okay, Fran Brown can make a bowl game with this roster as it's constructed. Syracuse fans should be happy.
Certainly. And it starts with this game against Pitt. Can he coach what is a depleted Syracuse team? A lot of injuries on the roster right now. Huge question marks with quarterback. Another thing that, Griff, I got to say, you listen to that Monday press conference, he's not speaking your language. I mean, he put the nail down that Ricky Collins is his guy.
Yeah, which I mean, I've gone back and forth about this the past couple of games, and Ricky Collins is going to be Fran's guy. For Fran to just jump ship would not be Fran-esque. Fran's a very loyal guy, and so for him to back Ricky is telling, and it's what Fran you would expect out of Fran Brown and a man of his character. I think the point where it becomes a real argument is second half, third quarter this week. Ricky Collins is not leading the offense to points.
Yeah, if
Then
it's
you
a
try
30
something
point
else.
deficit or 25.
And then even at that point, well, Syracuse fans could be like, well, like especially at home, like this is a home game. It's alumni weekend. If this was on the road and your fans aren't like are like they're not fans aren't there. Like this is going to be a game where your fans are going to be there. The dome is going to be not sold out, but somewhat crowded, and if you're not putting a good product in front of your fans and they start leaving and they start booing, there's going to be pressure on Fran Brown for him to do something. And I guess that hasn't really been the case, maybe except for 2 weekends ago when it was Parents Weekend and Fran Brown trotted out Ricky Collins for his first career start, and it didn't go too well. And then last week against SMU, another slow start, and it's like, okay, like this is going to be the test. Is Fran really going to go through another game in front of a good dome crowd where the offense doesn't show up? And like that's all that really matters in these days, is as much as people love to talk about defense, it's the offense that drives ticket sales. It's the offense that drives merchandise and sales, and it's the offense that drives viewers. And so is Fran Brown going to make a change if things go poorly again?
Yeah, and not wouldn't just be going poorly again this season, but going poorly again against Pitt. You go back to last year, it was at the time Fran Brown's worst defeat in Orange, 41-13 in Pittsburgh. It was a number 19 Pitt team. And these Panthers put the hammer down on Kyle McCord. They made him look terrible. He threw a bunch of interceptions in this game. I mean, if they could do anything like that to Ricky Collins, I mean, uh-oh, it is going to be a long day at the office for Ricky Collins, who, in my eyes, after a bye week, I need to see. Not maybe not improvement, but at least some growth in throwing the football down the field. You got to be able to, I'm not saying put up, 50-yard bombs, but just connect with the wide open receivers. He cannot be airmailing Yasin Willis in the red zone like he did against SMU. Those chances in the red zone you just can't make up. You have to capitalize on those. And that's what I'm most looking in at Ricky Collins is, can we see some growth and can we see some more efficiency in his passing game?
Not being able to hit checkdowns is a little alarming, considering that this should be some of the easier passes to make in college football. And I think it'll be telling. Like, is if you have a guy open in the slot and he is running a simple slant over the middle and he gets open, like, is that a ball that can be thrown accurately multiple times in a row? And that will be the tell of whether Ricky Collins can succeed in the Syracuse offense. That, like, those simple passes. Yes, he can throw a ball 50 yards down the sideline and hope that one of his receivers get it. Yes, he can hand the ball off. Yes, he can use his legs. But can he make the simple throws that a quarterback should be able to make? And so quarterback's gem, like, that's the bread and butter for college coaches and college quarterbacks, is just throwing the ball over the middle of the field, finding your receiver in stride and letting them do the work. And I think that's going to be the difference maker for Syracuse. If it has someone that can do that at quarterback, it can win a game or two and maybe three going the rest of the season. If not, it could be a long season, especially if Syracuse doesn't figure out its run game to where it was at the start of the season, as Yasin Willis did not have a good showing against SMU.
That's the thing. I think you hit the nail on the head with the run game. Could this maybe finally be the game where it is a running win? Syracuse wins because they dominated the run game. They dominated the line of scrimmage. I don't think it's out of the realm. I just think it's whether or not Jeff Nixon and Fran Brown want to roll with that. If that's how they want to go, if that's what they want this offense to do, to be a run-first offense, if that's the game plan, that's the approach, I'm on board with that. Do that, because quarterback play hasn't been there for you. Why not lean on the run game? I know they didn't look good against the Mustangs, but just pound the ball, pound that line of scrimmage, see what you can do, and maybe, sprinkle in a few deep pass plays every now and then. But I think if it's on the table for you, and I think it is for Fran Brown and Syracuse, run the dang ball.
That's what the saying is. Run the dang ball, and it'll be interesting. I know, like, this is a very big offensive line, but an offensive line that has struggled at sometimes, an offensive line that has excelled at sometimes, and it's young. It's got some young pieces. Byron Washington, a freshman, has gotten a good amount of play, and there's some of these guys that are former big time 5-star recruits that didn't really figure it out at their previous schools. Came to Syracuse looking for that second opportunity, and they've shown here and there that they can compete. It's all, like, it's not the offensive line under Tino Babers. You're no longer undersized. You're no longer, well, sometimes you're no longer committing penalty after penalty. It's just the consistency hasn't been there. And, like, it was the promise after Steve Angeli got going in the first half of that Clemson game. Like, it was, everything looked so good. The expectations were thrown out of the water. This is a Syracuse team that can compete. And so for the highs of highs at halftime of that Clemson game to where you are right now, it feels like two completely different seasons.
It certainly does. And looking at picks here before we get to our great interview with Abby of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, learning all about this Pitt team. They just had an interesting change at quarterback that looks to be really working in their favor, getting Mason Heinsohn in there at QB1. But looking at picks, Griff, we've kind of gotten off to a mediocre start to the season. We've had our bye week. I think Syracuse has thrown a bunch of curveballs at us, and that it's been hard to gauge whether or not this team's going to get a win or loss. And I'm kind of in that same road this week, and I'm having optimistic hope that it's at home. Maybe Fran Brown can cook up some Miami magic where they get an upset. But the other side of me is thinking this team's gotten blown out 2 games in a row. What's stopping them from getting blown out in the third game?
Not a lot, to be honest. Like, I think this will be a game that is over quickly. And I bet against Syracuse. I picked against Syracuse last week, and they helped kind of. They only lost by 13 because of some, I don't want to say fraudulent points at the end, but points are
Yeah,
points.
points, meaningless points at the end, really.
Meaningless points.
So, I mean, they gave up basically.
I mean, so it'll be interesting. I think 10.5 is the line that we are seeing right now.
Little
Opened at
optimistic.
11 and a half, so it's just hard to see Syracuse compete big within two I guess 2 scores, I guess, even though they were against SMU barely. But 10.5 is a small number.
Yeah, it feels like it could be more in the 17 to maybe touching 20 a little bit as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the game plays out. Syracuse Pitt Saturday night 7:30 in the Dome. To learn about more of this Pitt team, we talked with Abby of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Great interview there, and we'll toss it over to Abby for everything you need to know about this Panthers team. Super excited to welcome on to the Ostrom Avenue podcast a new guest, first time guest, which is always great. Abby Schnabel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Abby, thanks so much for taking the time this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me. It's exciting. I mean, Syracuse and Pitt is such a rivalry game, and it just the you can feel the energy around the city and everything.
Well, that's great because I think people forget that it's geographically the closest one for Syracuse. I think basketball recent years, there's been some good tension. You could thank Jim Boeheim for that name. But football-wise, of course, Pitt, we'll get into it, dominated the Orange last year. But there's no doubt that there's a little bit of a rivalry there, especially geographically. I'm sure there'll be plenty of yellow and blue in the dome come Saturday. And with Pitt, I mean, it's kind of been a 180 of a turn this season so far. A little bit of the opposite to what Syracuse has done. And it starts with that quarterback that switch they made. How surprised were you with that?
I was not totally surprised. Taking you back to the spring. So in Pitt's spring game, they had Eli Holstein, who was the heir apparent starting quarterback, Mason Heinstrl, and then Julian Duggar, who was their second string, who transferred. The only quarterback who had a good game in that day was Mason Heinstrl. And it's a spring game, so you don't want to read too much into it. But then we go into training camp and he continues to look really good. And you're like, huh. Interesting. And then as soon as Eli started having issues, there was a lot of buzz around the other media members of like, is this going to happen? Because Pat Narduzzi in the past has taken a really long time to pull the trigger on that. And he's a big fan of Eli Holstein. So I was like, you got to do something. Otherwise, we're going to lose more games than they should be losing. And so when they made that decision, maybe slightly surprised that they didn't opt to go with Cole Gonzalez first, but I don't. I'm totally content with the decision because Mason Heinstrl has shown that it wasn't a one-off against Boston College.
What about Heinstrl has looked so good? Obviously, leading them to a big win against Florida State, but what specifically in his game has looked stood out to you?
So we knew he could throw. Like that was we knew that because that's one of the things you can see in the practice the most. We hadn't really seen him play a lot of 11v11s, and we didn't see this in Boston College, the Boston College game either. But his run game absolutely surprised me because it's not in easy scenarios that he's able to get decent yardage. It's been in scenarios where he's had a lot of pressure or been able to very briefly find the open hole and just go for it. And that's impressive, especially as a true freshman. I mean, he is playing as if he has done this before. He's passing like he's done it before. And the leadership that you have from a guy who's 18, 19 years old is insane because he's 18, 19, throwing to, 22-year-olds at times or handing the ball off to 23-year-olds. So it's just been really impressive to see that his game is very well-rounded. He's good at passing, he's good at running. He sees the field better, I think, than Eli did a little bit. Cade Bell has a very complicated offensive system at times, and it always felt like Eli was just a second behind, and that's not the case with Mason. So I rambled a little bit there, but a lot to like about Mason Heinstrl for Pitt fans, not so much for the Syracuse fans.
No, certainly. I've been really impressed. I know the first game he played, wasn't too much of a measuring stick, but against Florida State, I mean, they had some big wins. I know it was early in the season, but still, big wins are big wins, and he really impressed against the Seminoles. And interesting to see if he can continue to replicate it. You mentioned Pat Narduzzi, year 11, and you said you were surprised that he made the switch so soon because in the past he was more hesitant. Do you think he made that, early switch because maybe his seat's a little hot. Maybe he had some pressure from some outside forces to make that switch.
Yeah, I mean, after Pitt lost to West Virginia, specifically West Virginia, and we had a bye between that and Louisville, there was a lot of talk about can Pat Narduzzi do this job and can Cade Bell do this job? So I definitely think that there was heat. It amplified after the Louisville loss, especially because they blew two double-digit leads in that one. And so I kind of felt like there had to be a change made if he wanted to not have the hot seat. I'm pretty confident in saying that Pat Narduzzi's job didn't really depend on win or losses right now because his buyout is pretty significant and Pitt Athletics is on a pretty in the hole right now. And then they
For
also
Penn
have,
State right now.
yeah. And then they also have to pay, athletes because of revenue sharing. So I don't necessarily think it was that, but I think I mean, and this is me, maybe guessing a little bit, but I think there was a lot of people losing confidence, in Eli Holstein. And when you start to lose confidence in your quarterback, how do you have confidence that you're able to win the rest of the season? And so he almost needed to make a change if he wanted to be able to turn the season around. And granted, didn't think it would be this fast of a turnaround or beating a Florida State team that held their own against Miami, but I'll take it.
Outside of Hennstall, what do you think have been the other factors in the last two games that have helped the Panthers overcome some of those early season struggles against West Virginia and Louisville?
So I think I'd be remiss to not talk about running back Desmond Reed. He very much was the biggest factor in that Florida State game. I don't necessarily think you win that without his explosiveness, without his ability to make plays even in tricky situations. And they honestly didn't even use him as much as they usually do. So it was nice to see that Mason and Desmond Reed have the chemistry because Desmond Reed hadn't played with Mason yet that we had seen. But I th really think you got to go back to the offensive line and I mean Mason, but we've already talked about him. But the offensive line has really like dialed in, and you wouldn't necessarily think that because they are currently down two starters. And this last year, when they started to lose starters, the offensive line fell apart completely. But this, and it's not just to the offensive line, but other places too. Pitt's pretty banged up right now. And every single person who has stepped in, there's been very little drop off. This offensive line is making holes better for the running backs, Jewels, Goff, Ja'Kari Turner, and Desmond Reed. The defensive line is arguably one of the best in the ACC, even down a majority of their defensive ends. And then, of course, the linebacker core. But I think it was just as soon as they got the complementary football going and that the defense wasn't on the field for 90 plays because they were on the field for 90 plays against West Virginia and Louisville. As soon as they got that balance fixed, you could really see that they were going to be a good team, but that took switching the quarterback so that the offense was able to just be more confident.
Certainly. And then looking more into that offense, the running game, we just touched on a little bit, but it's a three-headed monster. Three backs that have gotten over 150 yards this year. I mean, not many teams in the country can say that.
Well, and you also got to think about, I mean, Mason Heinsohn's only played two games, but he led the team in rushing against Florida
Yeah.
State. So it's almost a four-headed monster a little bit. Mason won't run probably nearly as much as the other three. But what I like about the three is they all offer a little bit something different. And I think it's huge that Ja'Kari Turner and Jewels Goff, they were the only running backs available in the spring. So they got all the reps that they wanted, and they're young, true freshmen, redshirt freshmen. So getting all those reps was super pivotal because Desmond Reed, being a smaller guy, he's more injury prone. We didn't know how that was going to translate onto the field, and it took some time, but it did really balance out. I mean, Jewels Goff has been very consistent, whether he's playing with Des or without Des, and I think that's important to have as a running back, especially in these past two games. Pitt used to really rely on chunk plays, and now we're chipping away on the downs instead, which is great. And Jewels Goff has been a big part of that. Desmond Reed, obviously an All-American, he's going to be your go-to no matter what. He can make plays that I don't think I've seen running backs make like ever. And he just won receiver of the week, so he's also a threat on that side too. And then Ja'Kari Turner, honestly, he's on the biggest up or climb, in my opinion, between the three. I mean, he had two touchdowns against Florida State, and he's a true freshman. He just adds this spark that Pitt was kind of missing, especially without Desmond Reed. And he's starting to play like Desmond Reed. So it's kind of scary when you think about, you're putting Desmond Reed in, but then when you're not putting Desmond Reed in, you're putting a guy who's slowly becoming to that level of talent. And I think it's funny that we talk about the right run game because I'd argue that the passing game, even under Mason, has been the focal point. But because the passing has been huge, the run game has been able to open up a bit more.
The Pitt has had no trouble scoring the football in what's the season, and obviously scoring like 60 points against Duquesne, that's one thing. 48 against Boston College, that's impressive. And then 34 against Florida State. Do you think in order for Pitt to win, they have to score a bunch of points? Or do you think there can be a game where Pitt's defense keeps them in it and the offense isn't so relied on heavily?
I absolutely think the defense is the stronger group of these two. I think the offense still has a lot to figure out. And although it has looked good against Boston College and Florida State, that squad, for lack of a better term, is so young and so figuring each other out a little bit still. And while the defense didn't particularly look great against Florida State, this defensive unit has been so solid. And I don't necessarily think you lose against West Virginia or Louisville if they hadn't been on the field for 90 plays, because that's exhausting. What I like about this defense is that your defensive line is really, really strong, even with injuries plaguing them. The defensive line and the linebackers, Pitt is really good at holding down the run game. I think at top of the ACC, and if not top of the ACC, it's pretty close. And obviously, everyone, I feel like maybe not everyone, but the linebackers have always been the big part of the defense for Pitt. And I'd argue that that's not necessarily the case. They're still very strong, but the defensive line has been taking a lot of attention, which is great because that's balanced. I will say that the secondary isn't as clean and would like to see a lot more from that, but I do think this defensive group is more consistent and more solid. So if we got into a position, or if Pitt got into a position in which they had to grind out a game, which I genuinely thought that they would have had to have done by now, I think that they would be fine.
Certainly. And, we've spoken to Syracuse head coach Fran Brown this year. He said last year was last year. Different quarterbacks, so much was different. But I bet if you really sat Fran Brown down, he'd be having some nightmares this week because that game in Pittsburgh last year was a disaster. At the time, it was his worst defeat in Orange. From what you can remember from that one, what did Pitt defensively do so well? And do you expect him to bring a similar game plan come this weekend?
So I was not at that game, but from what I remember, they did at least have one turnover, and I think that will continue to be key for this team. Maybe not against Syracuse, no offense to Syracuse, but I just think that Pitt is best when it's able to cause more chaos, whether that's a fumble recovery or an interception. And I think that's their path to success to continue. The secondary needs to get their coverage together, because you probably saw the Florida State touchdown, their last touchdown. That was just bad coverage by Javon McIntyre, who's a senior on the team. But overall, I mean, the defense has stayed very similar from last year. You've lost, I want to say, only one person to transfer portal, and then a handful graduated. But for the most part, you return a majority of your defensive line, a majority of your linebackers, and a majority of your secondary. So I would be a little nervous for Syracuse because it's so many people back. But they could expose problems in the backfield for sure. Sorry, in the secondary.
Pitt has the second most sacks in the ACC, but nobody has more than two. What is the depth of that? Like the D line, the edge rushers mean for Pitt, and what have you seen from pressuring the quarterback that has been impressive for this team?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really interesting because currently on the defensive end, they are down to like two actual defensive ends due to injury, and some of them are like out, but not out for the season, so they could still play. And I don't know if that's this week or next week or what. But you currently have a defensive tackle playing defensive end, which isn't, a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but it is a little bit of difference. The thing that makes that defensive line so good is because they had the depth, that really helped allow rotation, allow for guys to really want to go in and be hungry. We actually talked to the defensive line coach today, and I asked him how that changes the approach when you don't have as many guys to rotate through. And their thing is we're going to play the top four guys no matter who it is. And it's for fortunate that they still have, three of their four defensive line starters. But the fact that they've been able to add so much pressure against some really solid offensive lines, too, when you look at it, has been huge because a sack rattles the quarterback. And if you're able to get a sack and it's not just one or two people doing it, then you can't just try and block one or two people. You have to be paying attention to all of them. And that's what I really like about this defense is everyone's going to go for it. And there's not necessarily one star, although you would argue Kyle Lewis, but everyone is contributing on defense.
And of course, you know, every game is a big game in the college football schedule. But, you know, when you glance at this Pitt schedule, you know, no disrespect to Boston College, maybe not the truest of road environments. The Dome on a Saturday night, alumni weekend, it can certainly be a hostile road environment. And you look back to last year, week seven is where it all fell off the tracks
Yeah.
for this Panthers group. Do you think there maybe is some added pressure this week, knowing that this could be kind of the fork in the road to see what direction this Pitt team goes the rest of the way?
I think the fork in the road really was that Florida State game because it similar environment and that it was really rowdy. I would be interested to see how two games in a row my Mason Heinsohn specifically handles that environment because you got to think he's only played in two games. He started to look human a little bit in that Florida State game, and so I'm not going to say due, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was a little bit of a slowdown just because of all of it together. I don't anticipate a decline akin to last year just because a lot of that came down to injuries and quarterback injuries. And I'm pretty confident that if Mason Heinsohn like sprained his ankle, he'd still be on the field. And which is really good in the sense of that Pitt has that foundation this year. But I mean, I'll be interested to see how he specifically hangs, but I think this isn't the if they lose to Syracuse, then it says a lot about the team. So I think they need to handle their business, kind of.
After Syracuse, it's NC State and then Stanford. And then after that, it's three ranked opponents all in the top 15. How important do you think these next three games are going to be for Pitt if they can win a couple and then build their confidence and then maybe upset another ranked opponent?
Yeah, I consider these next three must wins because this team still wants to aim for that ACC championship game, and that's going to be really difficult with those final three, but it's going to be impossible if they lose to Syracuse, NC State, or Stanford. Luckily, all three of those are fairly beatable opponents. Again, sorry, Syracuse. And so that helps Pitt out a little bit, but it also creates a almost trap-like environment when you if you start to look ahead too much because it Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, and Miami are strong opponents. And if you start to think too far ahead, it wouldn't be uncommon for a team to get stuck in that kind of mentality. So they truly do need to handle business these next three games. It's not something that you can just rest on your laurels, or play just all the backups because you have to win those games if you want a chance at the title.
And really narrowing things into this game, you know, how important is it for Pitt to get off to maybe a hot start? Or is there something that you would look at in that Florida State game that said, oh, they did so well in this Florida State game that if they don't replicate, things could maybe go awry for them?
I agree with the hot start. The hot start has been pretty important for this team when they haven't been able to have a hot start. That is when they have gotten their losses or gotten into some significant trouble. And that didn't happen against Boston College or Florida State. They scored touchdowns on both of those drives. And honestly, in that first drive against Florida State, they converted on three different fourth downs. So I'd like to see that energy stay, converting on thirds, converting on fourths if possible. I don't necessarily think they need to score a touchdown in the first drive, but you can't leave the first quarter scoreless. You need to see the ball moving as much as possible pretty quickly, which I'm excited to see how like your defense, especially your secondary. I'm a Deuce Chestnut is fun to watch. And so yeah. So it's just interesting because they need to get on a hot start. Because they tend to start to regress towards the end. But maybe that's just different energy, new quarterback, all that stuff.
The last player that I want to mention is Rasheem Biles, who's been a dynamic player for Pitt's defense, one of the best on the team, leads the team in tackles, also has two sacks. He left that FSU game with an injury. Is there any doubt that he'll play against Syracuse, and how good has he looked, and how big of an impact is he making on defense?
I would be surprised if he didn't play against Syracuse. I haven't heard anything one way or the other, but Pat Narduzzi is notorious to not talk about injuries at all. So I guess we'd have to keep an eye out for that injury report. But knowing Rasheem Biles, if he's even remotely close to being able to play, he's going to be on that field. Because he actually, or he had a big play against Syracuse last year, if I recall correctly. And so I anticipate there's some juice with that as well. So he's just been so pivotal. I think everyone, again, looks to Kyle Lewis to be that kind of game changer on the defensive end. And I'd argue that it's been more Rasheem this year. I mean, his ability not only to get sacks, but to stop the run game, and even sometimes getting coverage farther out against some receivers. He's just been very dynamic and very versatile, which has been really key in the sense of, there are a lot of other positions that have dealt with injuries, and he has been so solid. The linebacker group as a whole has been so solid, but the way Rasheem Biles has, he's leading the team in tackles, first of all, but also just like every single game, he's doing something that maybe doesn't totally change the momentum, but it starts to change the momentum. And I think those plays are key, not only for Pitt, but for any team. And so he's been very pivotal, not only to the defensive success, but the ability that they've had to, score defensively as well.
Awesome, Abby. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we look forward to an exciting game, Syracuse Pitt. It always seems to draw some excitement. I know last year was a blowout, but no one saw that blowout coming, especially the form Syracuse had going into it. Now it's kind of roles reverse. Pitt certainly has a good run of form heading into the dome, so it would be an interesting one to see how it plays out. And Abby, we thank you for giving us that insight that we needed on the Panthers.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I wish I was able to make it out to the dome this weekend, but my coworker Stephen Thompson will be up there, so make sure to check out or look out for him.
Big thank you to Abby. Great getting new guests here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. She had great insight on everything you need to know about Pitt and really the turnaround that Pat Narduzzi's group has had this season. And ACC is still decently wide open, so Pitt is really in the fight. This is a big game for the Panthers. For Syracuse, unfortunately, I think any ACC contention hopes have kind of gone down the drain. They really need quite the turnaround. And as we've really harped on throughout the season, the schedule is not forgiving. It's not forgiving for Pitt as well, and it will be a good one in the dome Saturday night, 7:30. So tune in to WAER at 7 o'clock for McClurg Remodeling countdown to kickoff, and then a late one, but the double overtime takes you all the way up till 12:30. Call in, get your thoughts. Maybe it's a big win for Syracuse and Fran Brown. Maybe this is a turning point in the season to a season that's had plenty of ups. Well, maybe not plenty of ups. I should maybe reword that. Plenty of downs. One big up and an upset win against Clemson. Maybe things turn around for the Orange against Pitt. Saturday night, 7:30. We'll have the Ostrom Avenue podcast for you next week, recapping Pitt and getting you ready for the Orange's next game, which is no easier, Georgia Tech. And that should be a really interesting one. It was a really interesting one last year, just like this Pitt game was. So plenty of really good games for football coming up. Even if this team is struggling, they're still playing some really, really entertaining and fun teams. And basketball season, as we mentioned last week, be sure to listen back to last week's episode with Mike Waters, a great interview with Mike Waters. We get into everything you need to know about this men's basketball team and getting you ready for that big season as well. They're going to start up at the end of November, or rather the end of October. Season really kicks in November. So Mike Waters got you ready for that season last week on the pod, and plenty of other really good interviews we've had talking about this football team as well. So be sure to listen to past episodes wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. But until then, we'll see you next week, and thanks for tuning in.